You touch a key, and it just completely hard freezes the system.
Nice.
I'm hijacked.
Ding, 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 ding. We got a winner.
It only does this when it starts up.
Never turn the computer off then.
You can trust no one, especially people that you think you can trust. Except for us. Right. You can trust us.
We want others to learn from your pain.
Let me tell you what my dilemma is.
Let's do that.
Does your computer bite? Has your hard drive gone floppy? It's time to call the Computer Corner on News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Now in the Computer Corner, here are the Data Doctors.
And welcome back to another edition of the Computer Corner. It is, in fact, the Data Doctors.
Plural.
Ken Colburn and Brandon Disney together again for the first time this month.
First time in a while.
Yeah, it has been a while.
It's been at least more than 20 minutes, that's for sure.
We actually had a request from a listener, or a question last week from a listener saying, when will the dynamic duo ever be on the air again? So here we are.
You sure they were talking about the two of us?
Cause oh, yeah.
No. I thought there might be a request to have me never back on.
No, it was definitely it was definitely both of us.
All right.
Spring is in the air, is it not?
You know, I've noticed my allergies are starting to kick in, so I do believe that means that spring is so in the air, it actually hurts.
On occasion, yes. Here in the desert, things are blooming. Wherever you are, things are probably starting to get a little nicer. Some of you more nicer than others. More nicer?
More nicer-er?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So we thought, you know, spring is in the air. Why don't we talk about the annual spring cleaning of your PC that nobody does.
We're not talking about getting out your broom and your scrubby pad. Right, maybe you need that.
Well, to an extent.
I mean, on the outside, maybe.
Yeah, well, there's some dust bunny issues and, I mean, all kinds of fun stuff.
There's ways to get those dust bunnies out that won't cause damage, and we can make it not scary for you. You can open up that cover, and it might seem a little scary at first, but we can take that fear away. But then there's other things you ought to do.
And if this is the third spring that you've had your computer and you haven't bothered to do any spring cleaning,
meaning your machine's 3 years old or more,
potentially, this show is for you. Actually, if your machine is 6 months old and you've never done a spring cleaning, this show is for you. This is our attempt to try to help you be proactive, something that's not very common in the world of computers. Most people they tend to drive their computer until it crashes.
You don't do it with your car. I mean, everybody, well, most people anyway, they get their oil changed. They actually take their car to the car wash from time to time. You get your tires rotated. You do regular maintenance things. You replace your battery every couple years. You know, do you do all these things so that you don't break down on the side of the road?
And when you start to hear funny noises or strange sounds from your car, you don't just shrug it off and go, oh, well.
No.
Or I guess, with the exception of my daughter.
Right. The check engine light pops on. You usually make an appointment, take it in, have somebody take a look at it, figure out what that actually means. And most people, I think, have figured out that it makes sense, both from the convenience and not being stranded on the side of the road standpoint, and also from a long-term cost standpoint, to proactively take care of your problems when it comes to your vehicle, rather than wait for those problems to manifest themselves into something worser.
Well, and I think the problem is most people, as long as the computer is reasonably functional, they'll keep using it because, well, I'll deal with it later.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the backup problem. Everyone knows they should back up.
They
do. Very few people do. Or they buy something and they think it's automatic and they don't ever check. They're not backing up. And it's such a critical thing. It's a simple thing that if you do it consistently, it can save you enormous amounts of money and frustration and loss.
Yes.
So, again, the point of the show is to try to help you think about your technology in a different way, hear from other people, learn from their pain, and, of course, ask whatever question you may have by calling in at 602-277-5827. Whether you need or have a spring cleaning tip, whether this is the first time that you even consider doing any kind of proactive cleanup on your computer, or you've done it and you want to share what you've done or done right or done wrong in the past, there are those of you out there that have, without really understanding what you're doing, deleted things that have caused you a lot of grief. So we also want to talk about what you should not be doing.
Yes.
When it comes to spring cleaning, so you don't end up with a machine that's basically looking at you as if it doesn't know what to do.
And if you're scared of getting tools out and opening covers, a lot of what we're going to talk about, in fact, most of what we're going to talk about, does not involve a screwdriver at all. It involves things that you need to do, and it involves a little bit of time and being a little thoughtful. So we'll talk about those things. We've got resources posted for you if you want to get a little sneak peek, a preview, if you will. Jump ahead. You can do so online, datadoctors.com. You click on the radio show section, and you'll see this week's links. You also see a feedback area on the right-hand side there where you can ask a question or participate in our blog, give some general comments, whatever the case might be.
It's all there for you. The links that are there are designed to allow you to, A, look at the steps. For instance, the first link on there is talking about clearing out your dust bunnies. Talks about what you're going to need, how you do it. And it's what you want to do is read through this stuff before you say, okay, I'm going to do this or I'm not going to do this. There are some of you out there that are going to look at this and go, you know what, A, I got better things to do with my time.
Yes.
Or I don't want to take any chances. And you know what, that's fine. the professional services that are out there for you, they can take care of this for you. The whole point of it is whether you're doing it yourself or you're going to hire somebody, you're going to take it to a shop, take this time to really think about being proactive. Get this stuff cleaned up. It's amazing how much faster your computer will boot and run if it's actually maintained or monitored or managed by somebody. We routinely see customers in our stores that have a 1 or 2 year old computer, and their initial thought is, well, you know what? I'll just go buy a new computer.
Right, because this thing's just getting slower and slower, so it must be getting worn out.
Right, and computers typically don't wear out like like a car does, the way you're thinking that. Or the slowdown really has to do with the fact that the operating system, and in most cases Windows, has been overridden with all kinds of extra stuff that it doesn't need, that if you clean that stuff out, lo and behold, I don't know how many customer surveys we've gotten back time and time again, all across the stores all over the country. You made my machine faster than it was when I first got it. And it's because all of that extra stuff got thrown out so that your computer just did the bare minimums.
Yeah, think about if every time you went to get in your car, you open the door and all this junk falls out. And you go to put your cup in the cup holder, but you can't because it's just filled with junk. And there's just stuff everywhere. And you never took the time to clean out all that junk, pick up all those receipts and papers from the straws and all these things, right? Your car would just be overflowing. Well, you don't live like this with your car because it makes your car slowly unusable.
Oh, I don't know. I've seen plenty of people out there that live like that.
And so you take the vacuum cleaner to it and you throw some things away. We're talking about the same kind of thing in relative terms with your PC.
Mud and grime that'll build up underneath the carriage of your car and your wheel wells on your fenders. I mean, all that stuff. You want to get that stuff cleaned off so that your computer can operate at its optimum levels. 602-277-5827, that's the phone number. If you have any kind of a question, you don't have to be calling in about spring cleaning. We're just providing these resources and tips and ideas. And again, as you're driving around or as you're listening, as you're doing your honey-do list at the house, food for thought. Don't keep ignoring that computer. It needs a little TLC from you this week.
And if you're going to be jumping into any of the things that we have suggested there as far as spring cleaning, a little tip, you might want to print out the instructions before you begin, because a lot of what we're going to talk about requires you to shut down the computer, maybe reboot the computer, unplug the computer, and you're going to want to not have to keep referring back to the site and the screen that you might have to keep closing or changing. So print out some of those things if you're going to attempt to jump through some of those hoops and make some of your spring cleaning woes go away.
Absolutely. And while you're at our website, datadoctors.com, you can click on the radio show section and, of course, participate in today's show. You can also take a look at our weekly newsletter. If you're not a subscriber, you can look at the archives which are posted, including our tip of the week, our head whack of the week, our geek speak of the week, a little preview of this show, some news items, some opinion. A link to our weekly CNN.com video segment, which actually we had an email, somebody asking about that. They were searching for it on our site. We'll talk about that a little bit later. By the way, if you actually did try to catch this morning's segment as a result of what's going on in the Atlanta area with the weather situation, they chose to push our segment back till tomorrow just because there was some, the CNN Center, I guess, had some issues that they were dealing with when it came to the weather. So if you were looking for that, tomorrow at 9:30 Pacific, 12:30 Eastern, we'll be doing that live segment with CNN as well. And, of course, it'll be archived on their website. So if you're interested in that, take a look or watch for that.
Definitely do that. We got a line open, 602-277-5827. Time for a check of traffic and weather. And I understand that it's not so carefree out on the carefree highway on I-17. Steve Ludwig's going to tell us about that.
And welcome back to the spring cleaning edition of the Computer Corner. We're going to try to give you the motivation to do what you normally don't do, which is be proactive with your computer. We've posted resources at our website, datadoctors.com/radio. It's the radio show page. See the resources, all of the preliminary things that we suggest you do if you want to be proactive and do a little cleanup on your computer.
Clearing out the Cheetos from your keyboard?
Yes.
Well, so the whole problem with Cheetos is more than just what gets in the keyboard.
Yes.
My daughter loves Cheetos, and the world turns orange when she gets anywhere near them. She doesn't even have to touch them, and somehow it just gets everywhere.
And do you remember, that was our Geek Speak of the Week a couple months ago. Remember what the orange residue is called?
Oh, gosh. I forget.
This is real. It's a stretch. It's called cheat.
Cheat. That's the, well, some people would call it cheese, but if you read carefully, there's no cheese actually in Cheetos.
Correct. They're cheat. It's cheat.
It's cheat.
So we're talking about the spring cleaning steps, if you will, that you should take. And Mac writes, running Windows Vista and the hard drive is full.
Full, full, full?
Full.
Okay.
102 gigabytes of space that I cannot account for. The computer is only 4 months old. All of the folders have very little in them. Obviously, that's not the case. Mr. Mac, certainly you need to get the urge to purge. First thing to do would be go into your control panel. And this is all of you. This is one of our spring cleaning tips. Go in and find those programs that either you don't use anymore, don't need anymore, or you have no idea how it even got in there.
So the add remove programs section of the control panel, and then just look through the list and things that, gosh, this is stuff that came with the machine that I never use and I never want to use. Dump that. Stuff that, gosh, I don't remember ever installing this. It probably kind of piggybacked its way in with something else you did.
Anything you see in there that says toolbar, unless you purposely put it in. Toolbars are common spyware, adware programs that sneak in through an installation of another program. And if you're not paying attention, you just click on next while you're going through the install. In the middle of that, there was usually some little thing that was pre-selected that says, yes, install this toolbar.
Right.
I have seen customer machines come in with probably 6, 7, 8 toolbars.
Yeah, all of which, by the way, if you're running any of the newer browsers like Internet Explorer 7 or Firefox, there's a built-in toolbar, most of which, the reason that these toolbars generally get installed on purpose is that you want to have the ability to search without having to go to a search page. And now modern browsers have that built in. So,
there's no real reason to have a toolbar anymore.
You also needed it for pop-up blocking before, but again, modern browsers have that built in. They do a great job. I mean, toolbars have become pretty obsolete except for in some cases. So if you have them and you purposely installed them, you might want to think twice about that as well.
That will also slow down your overall browser experience if you have too many of these toolbars, because each one of them, whenever you open up the browser, each one of them goes out and tries to report home. Because the whole point of this for the people that created the toolbar is to create this mechanism that allows them to throw advertising at you.
Yes.
That's why they want to sneak these toolbars in on you. So anything that says toolbar in your ad remove programs list, you can probably get rid of that. Now, the real thing here is to know when to say no or when not to take action. If you don't know what something is, don't just assume that it's bad and you should get rid of it. You should basically do a Google search to figure out what the heck is this program. Because some of this stuff that you won't recognize were pre-installed drivers and things of that nature, important programs for the basic function of your computer.
And when in doubt, leave that thing alone and do some more research.
Yeah. Don't uninstall something unless you know for sure it's something you installed, you want to get rid of. Toolbars, things like that, are not germane to the operation of a computer.
Correct.
But the other stuff that could be anything under the sun. And folks, these things that track the weather for you and the smiley faces, I mean, all that stuff, they all seem benign, but each one of those added on with everything else that's going on, especially if you have kids in the house and they're just putting screensavers and all kinds of extra stuff in, that all really starts to bog down. You'll be amazed how much faster your computer boots up and runs if you just start pulling some of those layers off. So that would be what we would suggest, Mac, that you go in and find those things that you have in there that clearly you probably had nothing to do with. And then later on in the show, we'll talk more about finding those really big files and how they got in there.
There's a cool little utility, too, that's built into Windows called Disk Cleanup that we can talk about. That's a safe way to go in and purge some things when you're not quite sure where to go. It'll kind of help guide you through that process. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Of course, more of your calls and questions, or I guess we'll start taking your calls and questions. 602-277-5827. Join us online, datadoctors.com/radio. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. We've got so much show left for you. We've got an hour and a half we're going to talk to you about, or we've been talking to you about, cleaning up your PC, doing some spring cleaning, trying to adjustimicate some of the junk that's just built up inside that thing and make that machine perform the way it was meant to.
Yeah, spring cleaning. Take your cue. If you're one that annually does the spring cleaning around your home, then extend it off to your computer. And all the tips to do that are posted at datadoctors.com/radio. Shall we go back to the phones, or should we go to the phones?
The phones we can do. We've got a couple lines open. I want to remind everybody, you can dial in now, 602-277-5827. Let's...
Dem phones.
Let's see. Brad in... I don't know where Brad's at, but Brad...
Here in Mesa.
He's got some potential spring cleaning issues himself. Brad, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
What's on your mind today?
It just takes 6 forevers to boot the machine. I was concerned that perhaps the operating system needed to be reloaded, and I've been told that that's not the case. I can't tell you exactly how many processes are running when I open up Task Manager, because I'm not in front of my computer at the moment. I know it's 40, and how do I know what to get rid of? Because you don't want to get rid of system.
Well, if it's only 40, then you're in pretty decent shape.
Yeah, it's a pile of them. I know that it's a large number.
It
takes forever to load.
Yeah, so you're probably more in the 60, 70, 80 range.
Possibly. I can't tell. I couldn't tell you right off.
You know, what's funny, we talk a lot about this, especially lately, this number of processes, and that's just a nice indicator of... Is there some problems, or are there some problems? And so then the question that's always followed up with after we talk about that is most people go in and look and go, whoa, I had no idea. Okay, now what can I get rid of and how do I do it? And that's where life becomes a little bit more difficult. And the reason being is the version of Windows that you run and the version I run, even though they might both be Windows XP or Windows Vista, you've got different patches and service packs. You've got a different ISP than I have. You have different
hardware,
programs installed, a different printer. I mean, the combinations are almost infinite.
So here,
right.
I mean, what you can do is this is, you know, we started really creating as much information as we could about this a couple of years ago. I've written multiple columns, and one of the links on this week's radio show page is what do I do with these excess processes? And you have to make a couple of decisions. If you're willing and able to go and spend the time and effort and feel fairly, you know, moderately technical, you can look up what each process in the system means by actually doing a Google search on each one.
Now, let me warn you, when you do that Google search, a lot of the top couple of links you're going to get will be to, you'll notice if you search whatever process. So you put in, for example, explorer.exe, it's going to come back and tell you. You know, Google will say here's, you know, 60,000 different places that can tell you what that is, and you'll notice the top three all will be very, very similar in how they word things, and most of them will try to, at the bottom of a very short explanation, try to sell you a piece of software that's designed to go in and supposedly do all this sort of research work and decision making for you. Let me tell you that software that they're trying to sell you, that's their revenue stream. It's how they make money. And if that software really did a great job, well, let's just say it doesn't really, it's not going to solve your problem. You're going to spend money on nothing.
Right.
So, but the idea is...
The sponsored links at the top.
Well, the idea is for you to look not at one page, but at multiple resources that tell you basically what the program is or what that process is.
Uh-huh.
So you can quickly figure out, okay, this is a Windows process, this is not a Windows process. And then, let's say it says, well, that's for a toolbar, right? Well, then you want to go look in your add remove programs for this toolbar program, and you want to tell it, you want to uninstall it.
Right.
So it's a step-by-step process like that, and every single computer is different. And the idea is for you to, use the processes like we're talking about with the engine light on a car.
Right.
When an engine light on a car comes on, it doesn't tell you anything, right? It just tells you you should probably have somebody look at this thing. And that's really what this processes thing is. And just like with an engine light, there are some things that you can manage, like adding a quart of oil or that kind of thing, and then there are some things that you're better off just taking into the dealer, let a professional take care of it. And that's the part we really can't answer for anybody, particularly, you know, on a person-by-person basis, because it really depends on your time, you know, how much time do you have? Because, I mean, you're going to spend several hours going through 60 or 70 processes just to figure out what the heck they are.
Right.
And then who knows whatever time to actually figure out how to get rid of these things.
Because different ones you get rid of in different ways. For example, Ken mentioned that the AdRemove programs for a toolbar that's in there that you decide I don't want. That's easy, right? But
right.
What about something you do want, like Acrobat Reader? It's an Adobe product. Everybody has Acrobat Reader installed. Well, it sticks in this little thing because it decides that it's the most important thing ever. It's this little thing that supposedly makes it load faster. Well, I happen to know that if you get rid of that little thing that supposedly makes it load faster, it doesn't load any slower, and you have one less process running. And so that's an easy one. That's in the startup group. So that's just in your startup folder. It's an easy one to delete. But other ones will be kind of buried in the registry someplace. And so there's different, depending on what it is, how you remove it is a little bit different. And that's part of that research. Once you determine this is something I don't need, then you have to do further research to find out, well, what's the correct removal procedure?
And how old is your machine?
About 2.5 years.
Yeah, so there's a great candidate for a lot of people in that situation. Are going to look at it, you know, this thing's just so slow, I'm going to go buy a new computer. And the problem is, when you buy a computer these days, especially if you're buying the lower-end computers, one of the ways they're subsidizing that low price is to preload a bunch of software that these third-party software companies paid them to put into your new computer.
Right.
That are what are called trialware programs, right? So now you're getting a new computer that's already got 60, 70 processes running in it because of all of these things that they did to make it a little extra money.
Right.
And you didn't really solve your problem.
In fact, you got a new problem, too, which is, well, now I got the new computer.
Don't even recognize.
Yeah, I got to get all my settings, and I got to set up with my internet service provider, and, oh, what about all my documents, my data, my address book, my favorites? You got to get all that from point A to point B, and so pretty soon you spent, on the really low end, $500 on a PC, and then you're going to spend, you know, another $50-$60 on real antivirus and a spyware, and then you're going to have to either buy a program or pay someone some money to get the data and the settings transferred, and then you got to go and do all the same things by removing all these extra processes, and by the time you're all said and done, you spent $700-$900 when what you were really trying to do is solve this issue that really wasn't that big a deal.
So, I just wonder how many of these programs, Adobe is a good example, they want their program to load first. And so you have all these programs trying to load first, you end up with a bottleneck in startup, and that probably would speed up the computer.
Oh, yeah, no, it has nothing to do with who's first, who's second. That only has to do with conflicts between programs.
Uh-huh.
Who's first and second is really not the issue. The issue is there's 25 people standing in line every time you try to open your door.
Right.
Right, and all 25 have to get in before you can get in. And so that's the whole point of these processes. That's telling you, you've got way too much going on automatically. And so what you want to do is get those people that really don't need to be in line out of line so that line is shorter and your machine starts faster. And as you're using it, everything that you want to do will load faster and those things. So, I mean, again, it's check out the resources. If you're a do-it-yourselfer, there's I think, ample instructions in the column that I wrote that explains how to go through this step by step. And if you're willing to spend the time and effort, great. I mean, it's, you know, we've talked about this on the air for 15 years now. With computer issues, it's your time or your money. You have to decide which or a combination of which you're willing to spend. But ignoring it, I think, is really what has to stop. And that's why it ends up costing you a lot more in the long run, because you'll make a bad decision, like buying a new computer when it really, you know, the computer was fine.
It didn't do you any good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, buying a new computer is
rarely
never the first. It should not be the first thought of how to solve a problem, because you don't ever solve a problem by doing that. You change a problem. And
right.
There are cases. I mean, we get machines in sometimes to our shops that, you know, they're 5-6 years old. They're, you know, people want to. We can only do so much when you're trying to run Windows Vista on a 5-year-old machine.
I feel pretty confident that I have a powerful enough machine. Oh, sure, I'd love to have a quad dual-core processor and a pair of 8800 video cards.
But you know what? None of that would come into play. None of that would mean a hill of beans. Exactly. If you've got 80, 60, 70 processes when you start up your machine, even with all that extra horsepower, you're still standing in line, you know, waiting for all this stuff to load.
Exactly.
Because the bottleneck in a computer when it comes to starting up is the hard drive. And so the more programs you're asking Windows you've told Windows inadvertently to load up during the startup, that's what that whole long startup process is that hard drive trying to find all that stuff and load it up into memory.
It should be easy enough to figure that out with it's a lot of time.
Yeah, all this stuff definitely, it's what I would consider fairly easy. Again, it's coming from a sort of technical point of view. But it can be very time-consuming. And so you just need to set up, you know, just like if you're going to do spring cleaning in your house, you don't get that done in 15 minutes by waving a magic wand. You got a dedicated day or a weekend or whatever the case is to kind of get after it.
Now, let me give you a bonus tip, Brad.
Sure.
Since you're going to go down this path, which is a good path for everyone to go down, not, you know, head in the sand, but figure out exactly what's going on so you make good decisions. But let's say now you're going to go through this, and next week you've got this thing down to 35, 40 processes. Here's the bonus tip.
Okay.
Check the number of running processes once a month.
And every time it starts to sneak up,
right?
if you stay ahead of it, right?
Don't let it get to 70 or 80 next time.
Right.
When something comes up and it goes from 35 to 40, that means 5 extra processes snuck their way in.
Well, if I keep my wife from loading games, I'll be all right.
Well, do you have any kids in the house?
None that use my computer.
Well, then you're in pretty good shape there, because that's
just
usually
me and the wife. So.
Usually the biggest culprit are the teenagers.
Now, how this call started, Brad, you said, you know, I don't know if I should reload Windows or not. I can tell you that is the quickest shortcut to getting it to boot fast is reloading Windows. Now, you're going to probably spend as much time, if not more, though, getting all your settings back in place, re-importing all these things. It's going to be like a new computer, but without the new computer. So if it was me, I would probably go through the process as painful as it might be if you're going to commit the time to it. I think I would go through the process of trying to weed those things out rather than scrape it and start from scratch.
Right. I don't have a problem taking the time to do that. It should be technologically easy enough to accomplish. I was just concerned that perhaps Windows itself was getting bad information and not so much being overloaded. Is just not being corrupted.
Well, if that was the case, you'd have all kinds of other problems with lockups and blue screens and things. That doesn't sound like that's your issue. If it's just,
I know I don't get the blue screen at death right now.
Yeah, just slow. That most likely is going to point to just all kinds of garbage needs to be cleaned up.
Yeah, I mean this goes to the most popular service we've ever done for, you know, this is our 20th year of providing computer service, is what we call our comprehensive overhaul, and it's because what we've learned is that, you know, most computer service places want to make it as easy as they can on themselves for the repair. So a lot of people that are in the computer service business will immediately go to a machine like yours and say, reload Windows. Because from their standpoint, it's the easiest thing for them to do. They don't have to spend that much time on it because they don't have to figure out what's going on. They don't care. They're just going to get it back to where it was, you know, with clean Windows, and then roll it back to you and go, good luck. The rest is on you.
You said it was slow to boot. It's not anymore,
yeah,
but
so
there's
now,
more problems for you.
So if you go in there saying, hey, you know, I want this thing to work, and they say, well, reload Windows, and your machine will boot up real fast. Again, that was them letting you make a decision without all the real information that you should have had. So what we learned a long time ago is our customers really do want their computers to look and act like it used to. They want their same wallpaper. They want their icons. They want all that stuff. But they want us to be faster. So there's no way to do that by reloading Windows. And that's why we do this comprehensive service. I'm not sure there aren't too many other people in the industry that are willing to take the time to do this. But we know at the end of the day, even though we have to have your computer longer than we would if we were just reloading Windows,
sure.
At the end of the day, when you have a working computer again, it's actually a shorter period of time because all the stuff that has to happen after the reload, that could take weeks, right?
Yeah, trying to get it back to where it was.
Yeah, we try to avoid that wipe it clean and reload at all costs because it's just not fun for anybody. So.
I mean, I've come to the point sometimes where it's just like, let's just F-disk the whole mess and we'll just start over from blank.
Yeah,
that's not really a very good option either.
Think of it like this, okay? If you have your computer and it's really a mess, think of it like a house that's really a mess, right? Reloading is like taking all the furniture out of the house and like repainting the walls.
Right.
Or you go, wait, okay, now you got a new house that's fully, well, where's all the furniture? Well, now somebody's got to put all that furniture back.
Right.
As opposed to buying a new computer is buying a new house. Well, same problem. You got to move all your furniture over. What a comprehensive overhaul is basically room by room, you pick up every piece of furniture, you clean up what's in and around it, and put it back exactly where it was. So it takes more time, but then your house is perfectly clean and everything's exactly where it should be.
Yeah, you don't go in the cupboard and try to figure out where you kept the cups and glasses.
There you go. All right, Brad, hey, thanks a lot.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. I appreciate you all the time.
Thank you, Brad, and we spent a lot of time because of how common that situation is. So.
Absolutely. Hey, Steve Ludwig's in the KTR Traffic Center. He's going to tell us about the latest with traffic and weather here in the Phoenix area. Steve, take it away.
Hey, want a tip on how to print on both sides of your paper? Even if you have the most basic of inkjet printers.
Man, I can print on both sides?
Mm-hmm. Want to save a tree?
That might save more than just a tree. It might save a forest.
Got a tip for you there. How about the head whack of the week? Those of you that have both XP and Vista machines, one of the reasons why they won't talk to each other. There's a tip there on how to make them play nice.
Yeah, I've got that at home. Luckily, I know a thing or two about computers and figured out how to make that work, but that can be an awful frustrating thing for a lot of people. So,
you want to know why Russia, Romania, and China are your enemy when it comes to phishing scams?
Russia, Romania, China. They all start with an R except for China?
Close. All that and more in our weekly newsletter, yours absolutely free, by either subscribing on any of the web pages at datadoctors.com that says newsletter, or by going to the free help section of datadoctors.com and looking on the right-hand side, you'll see there's a place where you can look at the archives, the last 10, 12 editions of the newsletter available for you online as well. So check all that out if it's something that you're interested in. One of the things that I was told when I was very young, I'd make a great astronaut because I have a lot of space between my ears.
Mm-hmm. Empty space?
I don't know.
Yeah?
I love anything to do with outer space, deep space, all that stuff. Did you hear about Google Sky?
Google Sky?
Google Sky.
Is it anything like Google Earth?
It's like Google Earth for outer space.
So it's Google Earth, but flip the cameras the other direction.
Yes.
Huh.
And so, and like any of the
imagery.
Wait a minute,
but it's not really sky then. It's beyond sky. It's where it gets dark again.
Yeah. Like way out there. Like the stuff that only the highest-end telescopes have been able to pull together and bring back in.
So they're, like, somehow buying the pictures and imagery from, like, space telescopes and junk?
I don't know, but if you're interested, if you like that kind of thing, check it out. It's their latest little freebie.
Every time they start down one of these paths, I can't help but think, okay, how are they going to make money with that? And it's not obvious, and then usually a few months later, it's like, oh, well, okay, now I get
it. Here's how they make money at doing all this free stuff.
Yeah.
They're smarter than you and me.
Well, yeah, that's not hard to do. Remember that space between your ears comment?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Hey, when we come back, we got Frank's got a great question about backup. Frank, hold the line on that. Casey, you want to throw out the whole Linux discussion? Let's have that as well. Rick, with your Wind Patrol opinion question as well. We want to answer all of those and more. Vern, Stewart, hang tight. Hour number two of the Computer Corner coming up, and as well as our Geek Speak of the Week, where we teach you some new piece of vernacular in the tech world.
Stick around, keep it tuned in right here to FM News Talk 92.3, and check out the website, datadoctors.com/radio.
You touch a key, and it just completely hard freezes the system.
Nice!
I'm hijacked.
Ding, 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 we got a winner!
It only does this when it starts up.
Never turn the computer off, then.
You can trust no one, especially people that you think you can trust.
Except for us.
Right. You can trust us.
We want others to learn from your pain.
Let me tell you what my dilemma is.
Let's do that.
Does your computer bite? Has your hard drive gone floppy? It's time to call the Computer Corner on News Talk 92.3 KTAR. Now in the Computer Corner, here are the Data Doctors.
And welcome to hour number two of the Spring Cleaning Edition.
And the Dynamic Duo Spring Cleaning Edition.
Wow.
Right?
More than we could possibly handle here this week. Of the Computer Corner, it's Ken Colburn and Brandon Disney together again for the first time this month. And thank you to T. Richard McKinney, who was the one that inquired last week and also gave us the hooray that we're back together. And we're glad we could oblige.
Oh, and Greg, who said, hey, you guys sound great back together again. And that's cool.
You guys rock or something?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Hey, thanks, Greg. Thanks, Mr. McKinney.
So before we go on to the discussion, and actually back to the phones, talk to Frank and Casey and Rick and these other folks,
How about we do our Geek Speak of the Week? Every week we try to bring you a new word, a new term, something that you can use to sound really cool at a cocktail party.
I don't know about that.
And if you aren't being invited to cocktail parties, maybe it's because you don't have the vernacular.
That, you know, in fact, I'm fairly sure that would be the reason why you'd be excluded from the cocktail party. So, this segment is just for you.
Just for you. This week's Geek Speak of the Week is dot comrade.
Do you say it dot comrade as you take your shot of vodka at the cocktail party?
I suppose that would be okay.
Yet,
actually, you would typically not find any dot comrades at a cocktail party because they're internet acquaintances or someone you chat with, but have never actually met.
So what if I'm at the cocktail party and you are my dot comrade?
Yes.
Of course, you're not at said cocktail party, but I'm so busy texting with you, chatting with you, SMSing with you, whatever the case might be, that I'm really not at the cocktail party, even though I'm physically there.
You are very interested in interacting with your dot comrade.
Huh. Can dot comrades be of the opposite sex, too?
Doesn't really matter.
Hmm. It's in fact, you may not even know. You could think they are who they are, and then they're not.
Yes.
Mario told me about a story like that once.
Yes.
He got caught up in... I shouldn't go into detail.
No. RussianBrides.com or something? No.
Bride.ru.
Oh, is that what it is?
If you want to buy yourself a wife...
Yeah, whatever.
It's a quality place to go.
No, sir. this week's Geek Speak of the Week, dot comrade. So, yeah, and you that have younger folks in your home, you're very well aware of how many dot comrades they have because you probably have never met most of the people they're connecting with every single day.
So the qualification for someone to be your dot comrade is you have to have spent time with them online, but never actually met face-to-face, right? As soon as you've met face-to-face, they're just a comrade that you happen to be chatting with?
Or a friend.
Okay.
The old school. Let's go back to the phones here and see if we can help Frank.
Oh, was it Frank?
Frank was next.
There's Frank.
Frank has a very, very good question that I think a lot of people can learn from. Frank, what is your question?
Hi. I have a question about backups.
Yes.
I back up my hard drive to an external hard drive, you know, fairly routinely. But instead of running backup software, I pretty much just do a copy-paste of the My Documents folder to the external hard drive.
Yes.
Just to keep it sort of simple.
Sure.
But what I worry about is if I ever have to use that backup software, the backed up files onto a new computer because the hard drive crashes on the first computer.
Yes.
Well, I have a headache sort of bringing those files in so that iTunes recognizes the music and so that the photo application recognizes the pictures.
Well, let's talk about, before we answer that specific question, because the answer really depends on how technical you are or aren't. So the absolute best form of backup is to, on a regular basis, have the entire computer, a mirror image, an exact duplicate made, right? That also requires the largest amount of space because it has to basically make a photocopy of your entire computer, right? And then every so often replace that or refresh that. But that's the best from the standpoint of if something happens, you take the copy and copy it back, and everything looks, feels exactly the same as it was before, and everything really is fairly easy. Obviously, the worst-case scenario is you're doing nothing. So you're somewhere in between.
Yeah, and what you're relying upon is that everything that's near and dear to you resides in the My Documents folder.
Right.
And that may or may not be the case.
I can almost guarantee you that that is not the case.
Even if it was, let's assume for a second that it was the case. What happens when your computer, worst-case scenario, quote-unquote, crashes, right? And crash is a really bad term, but let's just say that it stops working and it needs a new hard drive because the drive has physically failed. So you get new drive. You stick in new drive. Well, new drive doesn't do any good because you have to get Windows loaded. So you stick in your recovery disk, restore disks, or your Windows disk, whatever the case is, and you go through a 45-minute or so process to get the basic Windows running, then you have to go and find drivers for all the hardware devices in your machine and make sure that can then get online. And so you go through this process, then you have to install your programs, and then you have to get your external hard drive working on this computer and then copy your data back to your My Documents and then figure out how to import that and make everything kind of line up. Now, that can take a lot of time for someone who knows what they're doing, and for someone who doesn't, not only will it take a lot of time, but you're probably going to get stuck at some point because there's some technical steps involved in doing all that. So the good news is that all the stuff is there. So if you had to bring an expert in, you're talking about probably hundreds of dollars to have them help you get everything back to the way it's workable, rather than had you not backed up at all, potentially thousands of dollars to get that data recovered, if it's even possible.
What email program do you use?
I just go on Yahoo and use their email.
Okay, so you're not using like Outlook or Outlook Express?
Right.
Okay, how about any like home accounting?
Yeah, you know, Quicken.
Okay, well, Quicken doesn't store its files unless you've changed it. By default, it doesn't store its files in the My Documents folder?
Yeah, and I back up that to a little flash drive.
Okay, so you're doing two separate things?
Yeah.
Okay, so again, you're doing better than most people in that you have an idea of the critical stuff and you are making copies. What I normally like to talk to people about is before the crash, the way you want to determine what your backup procedure is your backup decisions are based on your recovery plan. So instead of figuring out what to do in the midst of a disaster, which is what most people do, you go through the whole process now.
And you've got a backup plan, but you've got no kind of recovery scenario or disaster recovery. You don't have the other side of it. And it's usually easier to start with, what is it if everything were to be gone tomorrow, what would I care about, and work backwards from sort of the end to what you do. You've got something that you're doing, and now you want to figure out, well, is this going to do me any good if I actually have a disaster?
Exactly. Right. So what you're doing now does not provide you with a key part of a backup strategy, which is called redundancy. So you have basically two copies. You have your stuff on your C drive and your stuff on your external drive.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right, yep.
So if, let's say, you contracted a virus or you lost something, happened to some documents and they got corrupted, and you didn't catch it in time and you copied it over, then both copies are corrupted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you don't have multiple redundant copies. That's not as big of an issue with your documents as it is with something like Quicken. You know, with a accounting package where there's a whole lot more detail in there.
Okay, yeah.
And so that's one program I'd say, look at how you're doing things. You're doing it on a flash drive. There's a number of different ways to get redundancy. But you want to make at least two or three copies and rotate those devices or rotate those copies so that you have multiple places to go if something goes bad,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to just one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if you don't mind holding, because I think, you know, we're kind of in the middle of this. We need to go to this traffic break. But if you don't mind holding, we're going to go through some other things that people should consider before they commit to a backup process.
Yes. So, Frank, you sit tight, and we're going to, I promise we're going to get you some more information that's going to be helpful.
Did I say backup? Would there be any vehicle backups out there?
Backups on the roadway?
Oh, maybe.
Steve Ludwig knows.
We've got tips galore for you if you are interested in extending your spring cleaning to your computer. Join us online at datadoctors.com/radio. You'll see this week's links that have everything from cleaning out your dust bunnies to getting the Cheetos out of your keyboard.
Cable cleanup. What about that?
Cable cleanup. Being careful about how you clean those wonderful flat panel LCDs. Well,
yeah.
You can really screw those things up if you're not careful, so.
Windex is not your friend when it comes to that.
No. Most chemicals are not.
And scrubby pads, real bad.
Before we went to break, we were talking to Frank about his backup procedure and some of the things to take into consideration. And Frank, I want to just underscore, with the exception of a multi-layered approach, there really is no backup procedure that's perfect. So you have to kind of decide, you know, what's best for me based on what I'm backing up and what am I willing to lose and how much work am I willing to go through in the event. Remember, there's two kinds of hard drives. There's those that have failed and then those that are going to fail,
mm-hmm.
right? And so while you still have those that are going to fail, that's why you want to go through this exercise. So
right.
You heard Brandon's explanation. Based on what you're doing today, you've got about 8 steps to get the machine to where it's a functional machine before you even start to copy the stuff back in.
Now, I do want to point out again, though, Frank, you've taken a huge step in that you've acknowledged that it's important and you're doing something about it.
Yes.
And so even your worst-case scenario is so much better off than most people's scenario they would actually be faced with today should something catastrophic happen to their machine.
So you have this external hard drive you're using now, and you're using it in kind of a limited way.
Mm-hmm.
A good backup program, and there's a whole bunch of them out there, you could tell the program to automatically once a day, once a week, whatever you're willing to lose,
And that's exactly how you determine how often should I back up.
Right.
What are you willing to lose?
Right.
If you're willing to lose a week's worth of work, then you can back up once a week. So if somebody says, well, I back up once a month, you're saying, whether you mean it or not, I'm willing to lose a month's worth of stuff.
Right.
Okay? So this software that's out there, you can tell it to do versions, right? So it's got multiple versions of your critical stuff. Or you can tell it to do an image. So if you didn't want to go through, let's say downtime was a huge killer for you, like since you want to get the computer back up and functional as quickly as possible, let's say you're a business, a image-based backup makes the most sense because literally you just restore the image to a new hard drive and you're back up and all the settings, your printer settings, your network settings, your favorites, your email, I mean, all that stuff that people don't think about, it's all there. You're not having to reproduce all of that.
The only thing I worry about there is that I'm also bringing back into, even if this were a new computer that I bought because the old one crashed, I'm bringing in all the old Windows muck that you were talking about.
Oh, no, you wouldn't. It doesn't work that way.
You don't do it one time and then never do it again. You do it, and then it reoccurs, let's say, daily, as an example.
The image-based backup is predicated on you using the same machine and just replacing the bad hard drive with a new one.
Okay.
And restoring the image, because it would be your old computer. Because you can't take an image from an old computer and put it onto a new computer without a lot of work. Because Windows is hardware specific. So you would then have to piecemeal your stuff that you wanted, your favorites. You'd have to know where they were at on that backup drive if you're going to transfer it over into a new computer. That's a whole other set of circumstances.
By the way, I want to point something out here. It's based on a real-world event that occurred this week. It was a customer from a location of ours up in Washington State, and they contacted us and through various ways made their way to me. And anyway, they had purchased a backup solution from us, and they were using it on a regular basis, and then their hard drive, their C drive, started to fill up. And so what he thought was, my C drive's filling up, why don't I take this backup drive and just, instead of it backing up what they've set up to do for me, why don't I just store all my pictures and my music there, and I should be in great shape. Well, lo and behold, a year or so later, this backup drive, again, it's all drives are either going to fail or have failed, and this one did fail. And now he's thinking, well, my backup drive failed. What happens now? Don't let your backup drive turn into something other than a backup drive. Don't let it become additional storage. Defeat the entire purpose.
So, all right, Frank, hang tight. We're going to do a break again, but we're going to take him off the air and see if we've answered his questions well enough for him to move forward. Casey, definitely want to have you on next to talk about
alternatives.
Yes, the third flavor of operating system out there that we rarely talk about on this show. You got Windows, you got Mac, and what is that third operating system opportunity? Well, you'll have to stay tuned so you can figure out what Casey's talking about.
We got a full half hour of show left, so stick around for that and a line that's going to open up in just a bit, 602-277-5827.
Spring cleaning tips at datadoctors.com/radio. Get them while they're hot. John writes, when I purchased the Norton Antivirus 2008, I also received Norton Confidential.
Norton Confidential?
Confidential. Well, isn't that special? Well,
what's Norton Confidential?
Is this program worth installing, or is it a potential problem? I'm using Windows XP. Norton Confidential, for those of you that are just hearing about it, including Brandon, because we're not real big Norton security software fans, not from the standpoint of the effectiveness of the software, it's from the standpoint of the footprint. The amount of resources, how slow and lethargic a lot of systems become because these current suites that do, you know, slice, dice, they do everything, they are just assuming you have today's hardware.
And they do too much.
It is overkill.
You know, I think though, they're starting to hear the voice. They're tired of getting slammed for being sort of bloated. And
they're getting better.
The news on the horizon is that some of these guys, especially some of the big boys, that the big boys being Symantec and McAfee, that they're working hard to try to unbloat some of their bloatware and tone that thing down. So our advice today may differ from our advice tomorrow.
Sure.
And that world does change from time to time.
Well, the Norton Confidential is an add-on package that basically looks for malicious websites. They look for phishing
scams and try to warn you about that. So it is effectively another product that's constantly on the lookout. Because the Norton security package doesn't have the antivirus, anti-spyware, doesn't have that proactive try to keep you from being infected.
Right.
I don't like that program near as much as I do a multi-use program that's absolutely free, that is very, very light on its feet. I've not seen any hit on performance, and that is the free K9K, the letter K, the number 9, webprotection.com. It's a parental control filter that also incorporates very good malicious website detection.
So you don't have to use it as true parental controls for it to be useful to you as a internet surfer user.
Right. You can turn off all of the parental control parts but still have it monitor some of the bad malicious sites that are out there. Because what it does, it blocks it. It just warns you, hey, the code on this website is suspicious.
Right.
So be warned. So, again, it gives you control over what you're going to do. I like that better than something else. I'm just not a big fan of anything Symantec is doing when it comes to another layer of security, because it's been proven in the past that it's going to slow the machine down. So hopefully that helps. Let's go to the phone here and talk to Casey, who's been holding very, very patiently.
Comrades, how we doing?
Good, good, good. Excellent. Look at that. It worked in the geek speak.
Let's talk about reasons why you don't even need Norton with an operating system such as Linux that doesn't even allow a virus like that to enter if you don't have a root password. Not necessarily all the time, but and that's what I wanted to talk about. Why not choose Linux, an open source operating system, over a Microsoft product or the very expensive Mac?
Well, who are you talking about? You talking about my mother-in-law?
Well, see, that's a funny thing you say that. Now, Linux isn't the same that it was back in 1996.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, no, and there's definitely Linux is a different beast today than it was in the past. But you asked the question, why not? So we got to first specify that, you know, what kind of user are we talking about?
Yeah, yeah.
Because at work with my specific application software that's, you know, I don't have much of a choice there. But at home, maybe there's a place and a time for that.
As an end user, Linux is more appropriate than a Microsoft product, of course, and we'll know that. But there's open source applications available that read any Microsoft document, such as, you know, OpenOffice compared to...
Right, but what you're missing here is my mother-in-law.
But see, that's interesting. I trained a little kid, right? He was like 12 years old, built his own Linux box, and got all of his drivers working and tweaked it and had to go through the couple of hours, you know, having to troubleshoot and get it going. But in the end, he ended up building other boxes for people like your mother-in-law.
Okay, but here's the magic part. You set them up. You got them to get over all of those hurdles, right? So that they could actually have a working machine. See, that's the problem.
So here, check this out. Ken's mother-in-law decides to go out this weekend and do what a lot of people do. Hey, there's this new digital camera on sale, and my digital camera's getting old, so I'm going to buy that thing. And she then takes it home and takes a bunch of pictures, and then she goes to get those pictures off, and well, now she's got to call Ken. And if she, because the software that came with the digital camera is for Windows and maybe for Mac if she's lucky, right? But certainly nothing there for Linux, and so somebody then has to go and research, and I'm sure there's a way to make that camera interface, but it's not just plug it in and click the button, because the guys who made the camera never thought that you'd be doing it on a Linux machine, or they thought that whoever was going to do it on the Linux machine would know certainly enough on how to take that thing and get beyond the basic steps, but that's not Ken's mother-in-law.
Let's look no further than the grand experiment that a very, very large company gambled that the general public could actually use a computer with an open-source operating system. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Correct.
What?
Are you talking about... Ubuntu or
Walmart?
Who's Walmart? Never heard of them. So they went out and decided, hey, because we're all about driving the cost down, the price down, right? That's their big thing. There's no better way to do that. I mean, we can only cut so much in the hardware side, but we can go to the operating system, and there's at least $100 retail wise. There, let's cut that thing out and get an open source free operating system. And they tried selling PCs.
I'm sorry.
Dell has just started releasing some computers that have...
Okay, but why did Walmart stop selling those open-source machines?
Probably because you can't beat the beast that is Microsoft, right?
Well, no, it has nothing to do with that, because that's a technical person's perspective. The average person that was buying it had no idea what to do with it.
The reality is that Walmart was facing a return line for these machines, not because there was a technical problem, because people couldn't operate them, and they were getting killed with returns.
Because nothing worked. My stuff doesn't work. All the software doesn't work. And for me to go out and find the replacement open source, see, you're motivated because you understand it and you're not afraid of it.
And believe it or not, I'm not one of those Linux elitists.
No, no, I understand. But you already have enough motivation, and the fear level is not there. You're willing to go through these cycles to figure all this stuff out.
Well, at the very least, you're a hobbyist, and you sort of enjoy the time it might take to figure out some of these things. Well, a lot of people just, I want to plug my printer in and my digital camera and my scanner, and I want to be able to do these things, and I can't, and I'm frustrated.
And see, if you are the one that's going to bring this to somebody's table, you become their primary support staff. And if that arrangement's okay for you and for them, great. And that's really what's important here. We're not saying that Linux is not for everybody or for anybody. It has very good usage, but it does require somebody that understands what they're getting themselves into from the long-term ownership, right, with the cost of ownership from the standpoint of time and frustration, because none of the stuff that they're used to being able to do is going to work.
So, at the Data Doctor's store that I got up in Prescott, right? Do they even sell?
No,
we don't sell anything Linux based at all. We don't offer that as an option because the people that come to us generally looking for as trouble free and time free experience as possible. That's just our typical customer.
But see, isn't that the irony of it all? Right, the trouble free and the fact that we're talking about. Microsoft's products are just as jumbled in the end, and are just as blocked and bloated systems.
But the mechanisms that are in place for supporting those issues, because so many people have it,
right,
make that experience, at least there's a path that's known of what to do. Yeah, I mean, you'll agree with me that when you get Linux, it doesn't mean you'll never have problems, you'll never have questions, you'll never be able to call or have a need to call a support staff. In fact, you're probably going to need more as an average user than Windows, because the stuff that's out there, as far as standard supporting mechanisms, don't exist for Linux, right? What people are used to doing, you call a software or a printer company up and say, I'm trying to get this to work on Linux. They're going to say, good luck. You know, go to our website and download the driver. Go find it on the open source networks. We're not going to help you.
I understand. It's just that, the biggest perplexing problem of it all is the fact that Microsoft has this crazy stranglehold on it. And even Mac, even though the product is superior, and of course that's my opinion, but even Mac's product is superior, and they can't even get over the stranglehold Microsoft has put on.
Well, if you're worried about that, there is a company that's out there that Microsoft is shaking in their boots about.
Oh, who's that? Google, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's Google. Because the minute that the operating system becomes irrelevant, Microsoft's stranglehold becomes irrelevant.
Right. So in your guys' prediction, will open source software ever have a quarter of the market share that Microsoft has?
If Google is successful, absolutely, because the operating system becomes benign and irrelevant. Do you know what operating system? Do you think the average person cares what operating system is running on their cable box, their set-top box?
No.
And because it's Linux, right?
Just plug it in and it works. Yeah. That's all they care.
But when it connects, it's connecting up to, same thing with satellite dishes, those kinds of things. They don't care what the operating system is, because the system itself provides the user with the experience they're looking for. And see, that's when this whole thing changes. The internet, you're seeing more and more where, you don't have, it doesn't matter what operating system you are using if you're using web-based resources. And I think that's where open source is really going to get a foot in the door.
The cable box and the satellite box and DVRs and cell phones, these are all great examples of no one really cares. When you go out and buy the latest, greatest gadget cell phone, mine's running Palm OS, Ken's is running Rims thing, the iPhone. Nobody really cares. What they care about is the feature set, right? They care about the applications. They care about how this thing functions.
And the support.
And at the end of the day, that long-term is likely to occur with what we use on our desktop. It's going to turn more into an appliance, a device we use, and none of that other stuff's going to matter.
Yeah, that's true.
So we're at today and where we're going to be tomorrow, they have nothing to do with each other.
So as of today, Linux is great for hobbyists and great for people that want to support their own mother-in-laws, right? but for the average consumer that's going to buy something off the shelf, it's not there. It just, as much as you'd like it to be, it's just not realistic, unfortunately.
Well, I see what you're saying, and you're right. You know, I use the same defense at Linux meetings that I've been to, and you know, most like even the most chauvinist Linux individuals, they're even aware of the fact that it's never going to be for grandma.
You know how we would know when it's ready?
When grandma can use it.
When it's actually happening. Right, you don't have to hope it's going to happen. It'll actually happen when it becomes usable. So, hey, Casey, appreciate you calling.
Thanks, sir.
Hey, it's always good to have that discussion.
Absolutely,
there's people out there thinking the same way, and there's always a it's good to have that open discussion about these things.
We appreciate it, Casey.
You're right, guys.
All right, take care.
Bye.
And with that,
you know what that sound means? Sound that goes from my right to my left in my ears. And in your car?
It's Stevie Ludwig time.
It is Steve Ludwig time. He's going to tell you about the old carefree highway and what backups are happening up there.
If you haven't had the thought of extending this spring cleaning in your home to your computer, well, that's what this theme of today's show is. If you join us online at datadoctors.com/radio, you'll see links to all kinds of suggestions of what you can do to perform a little spring cleaning in your computer, clearing out old, unneeded programs, the dust bunnies, excess files that that just build up as a result of how Windows operates, all that stuff.
What about even just cleaning the fingerprints off of the monitor?
Yeah.
I mean, simple stuff.
It's better to look good than to feel good, huh?
Well, looking good's part of it, right?
Something like that. Back to the phones?
Sure.
Let's talk to Rick.
Where's
about...
Rick? I found Rick.
His question about a program called Win Patrol. Is that correct, Rick?
Yes, sir.
How did you run across this, and what is it that you know of Win Patrol?
Well, the way you're speaking about it, that is probably... I thought I had got it from you all probably 10 or 12 years ago, when I with Adware and Spybot from before it was Snapfiles, it was something else, but you referred people there for some good products that were either shareware or you know, try and donator type programs.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's still there at Snapfiles, yes.
Okay. Well, I've used the Adware, I used the Spybot, and I thought I had picked up Wind Patrol in that same era a long time ago.
Yeah, I don't ever recall making that one of our recommendations, and the reason I don't is any program that tries to mess with your Windows registry, that's one of those things where when it works, great, but when it doesn't, it's really ugly.
Yeah, well, I can't imagine we would have ever recommended something that would at all mess with the registry. That's sort of against our religion, if you will.
Win Patrol, what it tries to do is undo things that kind of sneak in.
Right.
To your registry, and it's supposed to try to prevent things from happening, which, you know, to a certain extent, but really the thing that everybody's going to rave about is that it can go in and kind of put things back to the way they were. What they're doing is they're kind of trying to undo things in the registry. So I'm not a real big fan of anything that does that. Any program, it doesn't really matter where it's at, how many stars it's gotten, all those things. Because if a 5-10% chance of the users that they use this product have a problem because it made a change to the registry.
Mm-hmm.
That's far enough for me to go. No, I it's not something I'd recommend just blanketly that everybody stick in there.
Well, maybe when I went to Snapfiles to get these other ones, I must have read a review or looked at it. But I've been using it for that length of time. And when you mentioned the idea of removing processes and like going to Google and checking out what the origin of each of those ones, this is doing that for you or helps you to do it rather quickly. And also when you load programs and it comes up and tells you that you're putting something into your startup menu, did you really want
that? Yeah, it's kind of acting like the user access control that's now built into Vista.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of doing the same thing where it stops things from happening just willy-nilly. That, you know, especially if Windows XP, it's a lot easier for stuff to just kind of happen.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the Windows Vista, which has the user access control that basically requires somebody to acknowledge these things. And so the problem, though, is most people that have user access control in Vista are so upset with the fact that it constantly stops and says, do you want this to occur, that they turn it off.
Well, the other thing I've seen is just like when people install a program, they just want their instant satisfaction, and so it's just next, 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 paying no attention to what it's asking you,
Right.
And people are doing the same thing. They're so used to this little noise and this thing popping up that they've already got their mouse positioned where the button will be, and they're
right.
clicking the instant it is without really. I mean, they've now become trained to, oh, every time I try to do most anything, it's going to pop this thing up. So here I go, blip.
So
and,
like
and they're just clicking.
Pablo's dog.
So a good parallel example would be some of the more extensive firewall programs. They will monitor any outgoing internet traffic. So anytime it sees anything in the computer trying to reach out to the internet, it stops it and throws up this screen that basically asks the user a question that most novice users don't know how to answer. And so that's another issue, is that it creates a problem that wouldn't have been there if you hadn't installed the program. So again, I guess what I'm saying is, for somebody that's kind of well aware of the operating system, it's probably fine. If you're a novice user,